meantime, Elliot Friedman joins me here from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. And listen, the news this year, Friege, as you well know, in Philadelphia, has not been good.
No, tough year.
Yeah, real tough year. And, you know, Chuck Fletcher, general manager today, announcing that Sean Couturier has had successful back surgery, but he will be out for the season. Talked about Kevin Hayes, 50-50, that he's back this season. Speculating that Ryan Ellis, he may need surgery as well. They're not going to look for the full-time coach until after the season is done. What did you make of Chuck Fletcher, GM of the Philadelphia Flyers, this morning?
You know, I think he deserves a vacation.
I think a few people do, but yeah, he's up there.
Yeah, every GM who comes out right now, every time he comes out right now, it's just like one tough story after another. You know, coaching change, mid-season report, traumatic injuries that knock people out for a long time. It's like everything that Philly goes, every time Philly has a press conference, it's like, you're like, oh my goodness, you know, what else can happen? It's just been a tough, tough ride for them. Apparently, I think some of their, someone told me last night that some of their execs were in Colorado to watch Colorado-Tampa. So that'll be interesting to see if and where, what that means and what that could mean for the future.
Whatever it's just could tough. That mean, Elliot Friedman? I'm scratching my head here trying to figure it out.
Yes, we're all wondering, but like, believe me, I had several texts about it last night. Hey, guess who's here? Yeah. Guess who's here?
It's that time of year, right? It's the which scouts are here. It's a, hey, why did this guy just get called up from the American Hockey League, and why is he playing on the first line? This is certainly interesting.
I did have someone tell me that that they think that there was a team the other day that kind of moved or hid the sign-in sheet because they just didn't want people to know who was there.
It's a goofy time of year. It is.
You know, here's the thing. Like, we can't be so afraid of it. Look at the NBA trade deadline yesterday. And, you know, like, Jim Rutherford's unhappy about some of the names that were getting out. And, you know, he said these people have families. And I know that another guy who's really big into that is Ron Hextall. It's one of the reasons he's so secretive, because he was a player and he knows what that can do to players. And I do respect that opinion. I think about it all the time, really. But, you know, like, you look at the NBA trade deadline yesterday, at this time of the year, you know, you have to accept that, you know, this is the way it is. And there's a lot of aggressive reporters out there trying to figure out what's going on. And the thing that we all have to understand is this sells the game. You know, fans love it. There's nothing that gets fans more excited, aside from the games themselves, than what could be happening with the players.
100%. And I understand that players have families. I think we're all sensitive, or at least acknowledge it. But this is very much part of the game. This doesn't sneak up on anybody. When you turn pro, you know this is part of the game. This is, you know, this is part of what you signed up for. And as much as you may find it distasteful in your sport and, you know, moan about how these players have families, a lot of these players are the first to tweet out Woj bomb when someone gets traded or there's a big rumor about something in another professional sports league. So I sort of pull up on this one. Like, yeah, we get it. People have families, certainly. But everybody, there's no secrets here. Like, trades are part of the reality, and everyone in the NHL understands that, and players themselves, they may not like it in their own sport, but love it in MLB, NBA, NFL, etc. Their sport should not be immune.
I think some of them like the gossip more than they admit, but you know, that's life. I mean, we like the gossip about our own business, right? So that's, we don't always like what we hear, but we sure do follow.
That's okay. Let's stick with the Philadelphia Flyers here for a couple of moments. You know, you mentioned, you know, the Colorado thing is the obvious one for those that don't know, and that's the Claude Giroux situation. And, you know, I think we're all wondering, you know, A, what Chuck Fletcher does before trade deadline, and maybe even after as well. This is, you know, some draft trades too. But how deep does it go? You know, we wondered about this at the last press conference from Chuck Fletcher, and I guess now that there's more information about Ellis and, you know, Couturier and Hayes, we're wondering even more as we approach trade deadline. Is the Flyers situation coming in any more focus for you?
No, I think we all understand the way this has been headed. I think Giroux is doing a really good job of handling this. Like, simply saying that, you know, it's a situation where there's still time, and he's right about that. We still have 5 weeks, and also because of his cap number, it might be a thing that has to happen later as opposed to sooner. But I think with Philly, you know, that's the one everybody's focusing on. You know, like, I think that that's the kind of one that everyone's, you know, even if, like, Couturier was healthy, it's not like he's getting traded. You know, I think Philadelphia is considering a lot of things, but I think a lot of it is about direction. And if you look at them, they already had their big press conference with Chuck Fletcher and Dave Scott, and they made it very clear that a rebuild is not in the cards, and they're going to be open for business. So I think a lot of what Philly's going to decide to do is going to be determined by what the summer looks like.
Okay, so one of the most interesting stories going around is something that you've been talking about for a while now, and we wondered about going back to December and the NHL Board of Governors meeting in Florida. And now we find out that there were, you know, conversations between the Arizona Coyotes and ASU going back to the fall, and then they went away, and then they came back in December. Now, this was, you know, once upon a time a contingency plan for the Arizona Coyotes, but after yesterday's Board of Regents approving a development plan for the multipurpose arena, and that does include the Arizona Coyotes amendments to it, the Coyotes now have a clear path to play at ASU for 3 seasons, and that could be extended as well. So the approval is for $134.7 million development plan for this multi-purpose arena. What do you take out of all the information that came late yesterday?
Well, I think that some of the things that we were all curious about was how are the economics going to work? And now we know that the naming rights on the arena are going solely to the school. We know that the permanent sponsorships at the arena are going solely to the school. The Coyotes will get the gate receipts. They will get merchandise sales. They will get a percentage of some of the game night sponsorships. Parking is to be determined, but it sounds like a lot of it is going to the school. You know, the two things we still don't really know about is what's the average ticket price going to be and what is the attendance going to be. And I think the attendance, you know, for college hockey, we know it's 5,000. But, you know, because of the setup that might need to be done, things like broadcasting, can bleacher seats actually work for if you want to charge a bigger ticket price, for example, do bleacher seats make sense? Like, I think all of this stuff is going to be discussed. We have to figure out the attendance. I mean, the Coyotes fans are very happy. I think the Coyotes as an organization are at least glad to have a plan that they know where they're going to play next year, assuming that they're there. You know, I think the people who are unhappy going in are still very unhappy about it. Some of the other teams, the Players Association, the agents and things like that. But we still don't know the one big variable, and that is there a long-term arena solution in Arizona? And I suspect we may not know until March or April. So all of this stuff is going on, but look, they got one hurdle, and for the hardcore Coyotes fans, I'm very happy for them. I think there's a lot of other people out there that are looking at this and still saying, can this really happen?
You know, one thing that I'm just thinking about now, Elliot, that, you know, who I don't believe we've heard from, not that I necessarily think that it matters, but maybe it does. I'm curious your thoughts on it. Greg Powers is the head coach of the ASU Sun Devils. He's the hockey coach. Do we know how the hockey team there feels about this? And does it even, well, like they share the facility with wrestling and gymnastics to begin with. Now there's an NHL tenant as well. Do we know how Greg Powers feels?
Scheduling. They get.
I know they get first scheduling. I just don't know about. Like, I know they're going to try to keep everything separate. Certainly, they have to by way of NCAA regulation. But like, is this? I don't know what this means for Sun Devils hockey or from Greg Powers. Is it an aggravation? I don't know. Like, have to my knowledge, this, we haven't heard from Greg Powers. I don't know.
I don't know how he feels, but let's just say he doesn't like it. When the university president says, and the Board of Regents says, we're going to do it, you better learn to like it.
That's why I was asking, does it even matter if he likes it? Like, I don't think the Players Association likes it either. I just don't know if they're in a position to do anything either. They can stamp their feet and they can raise a big fuss about it, but can they do anything?
No, I don't think they can. You know, I looked long and hard at that, and you know, one of the reasons the initial price was $115 million, as you mentioned now, it's $134.7 million, and the Coyotes are responsible for making up that difference. One of the ways the Players Association could have blocked it was by saying things like the visitors' dressing room were not up to NHL standards. Like, that's something that's actually in the CBA. I think it's Article 34, where you can find it about, like, dressing room, what needs to be available. And if that doesn't reach up to standards, the Players Association could block it. But now, because of the new structure and the new changes they're doing, that's no longer an issue. That takes out an avenue the Players Association had to say no. So I'm not really sure. Like, you know, like I said, there's people who are really unhappy about it, and I think the Players Association is really unhappy to it. And there's times you can, you know, scream and kick and shout, and I think people want them to do more of it. But, you know, at the end of the day, legally, what can you do? And, you know, the other thing I'll say, too, is this. I've had some people say to me that they do think the Coyotes will make more money under this deal. Now, I want to see how that will work. And I'm sure a lot of other people will want to see how this works. Like, I'm really curious, what's the average ticket price going to be there? But, you know, hey, I think everybody knows how they feel about this particular issue. I don't think any minds were changed yesterday.
You know, I think this is going to be a great recruiting tool for ASU. You know, for 3 years, are we going to see the Sun Devils logo at center ice in NHL games?
We
don't know the answer to it, but it is one issue. Like, we talked about this on the podcast. It just came out. Like, is this going to look like an ASU game or an NHL game? What can they take off? What can't they? Like, what? Like, once you put that logo down at center ice, you put the logo down at center ice.
You know, I just think that the question I have, Jeff, is this. And this is the one thing that we don't know the answer to yet. Is there going to be any player, like, let's just say, like, a high draft pick or like a current Coyote or anything like that, who's going to say, I don't want to do this. Like, this is not for me. And that, I think, is going to be the biggest question. When that happens, that will be, and I'm not saying privately that I know of people who said I'm not playing there. I don't know that. I'm just saying that the question has been raised to me. What happens if that happens? And we cross that bridge when we come to it, and we have to see if it even happens.
So what you're saying is, what if a Shane Wright or a Connor Bedard get drafted first overall by the Coyotes and say, look, I'm not starting my NHL career at a college rink?
I think that's kind of been discussed behind the scenes, but you need someone to actually say it.
We're not there
yet. And what happens if that happens?
Nobody knows. Nobody knows. A couple more things here quickly. I was interested in, I'm interested in San Jose for a couple of reasons. I'm curious what Mario Ferraro's next contract is going to look like, and I don't think those two sides have engaged yet. But it sounds as if San Jose is engaging with Tomáš Hertl, who's someone that we're looking at around trade deadline as being a potential trade candidate. You mentioned him in the latest 32 Thoughts available at sportsnet.ca right now. What is the latest with Hertl and Joe Will, who's the... who's stepped in now for Doug Wilson as the interim general manager?
Well, I just like Will, like the he gave a media conference yesterday or spoke to the local media there. And, you know, he basically said that we had conversations and we want him to be here and he wants to be here. And we're going to try to do that. And, you know, the interesting question was, what if you don't have him signed by deadline? He said, look, I'm not going down that road. I'm just going to say that we're going to try to get him signed. So now we see what happens over the next 6 weeks. Can we get it done? Can they get it done? It's mm-hmm. it's a big number. You know, we all know it's going to be a big number. You know, one of the things I've been told that I forgot to put in the notes was that I believe that every – I don't know what the exact timing of the Evander Kane salary grievance is going to be, but I have been told that it's supposed to happen at a point where the Sharks will know what they have to work with. So, you know, that's
– salary. For salary.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Okay. Like for – so if they have to – if there is an Evander Kane cap hit or not, they're going to – they're supposed to know about it well in advance of – you know, doing all their business. But you know what? I think that, you know, Joe Will's kind of thrown the gauntlet down here. He said, look, like we're engaged. We've started. We're going to get to work harder. We think we can keep them. And now we're going to go to it. And so we see where it goes. I mean, I know that there have been teams that have been hoping that they can get their hands on Hurdle, at least as a rental for the rest of this season. But, you know, now we kind of see where this goes.
I want to ask you about the Oilers here. Game tonight, new coach, Jay Woodcroft comes in, Dave Manson on the back end as well. Is there anything, mm-hmm. you know, as you watch the Oilers and the Islanders tonight, is there anything that you're looking at specifically? I know things are hard to change profoundly from one game to another, considering the last game was only on Wednesday night, but is there anything that we can look at? Maybe it's ice times, I don't know. Is there anything we can look at and we can say, okay, there's a difference between Woodcroft and Dave Tippett? Is there anything in your mind?
Well, I think the one thing that's going to be different is, you know, they don't have Duncan Keith, so who gets those minutes?
Right.
That's going to be an interesting one. I wonder, does Skinner get a start or two? Mm-hmm. Ken Holland said yesterday. So they go, they play tonight, they have the weekend off, and they have back to back, and they don't have 2 days off again for another week. Now, Ken Holland said Koskinen, they're hoping he'll be back early next week or mid next week. But like, I'm curious, does Skinner get an opportunity here? Mm-hmm. You know, he knows Skinner. Nobody, and so like I think like they were flying to yesterday was an off day for the Oilers. They were flying to Edmonton yesterday. They really don't get a lot of practice time. They'll get a day or two this weekend. For me, like if you look at the numbers, where are the Oilers most vulnerable? They don't defend the rush very well. I think they're the third worst team in the league in by some models in terms of giving up rush chances. They're one of the worst teams in the league in allowing scoring chances from the slot. So that's my question is, how do they – it's not only going to be about personnel. It's going to be about how they slow that. But, the, you know, the number one thing probably is Jeff, do they start on time? Like, you look at Vancouver.
Oh, yeah.
They got the new coach bounce, right? Edmonton yes. this year is dead last in the league in scoring first. And I think that's what I think the Oilers want to see is – like, do we at least get a jolt out of this?
Mm-hmm. We'll see. We talked about who gets the bump yesterday by way of players and whether it's Skinner, whether it's Evan Bouchard. We'll start to see tonight as Oilers face off against the Islanders. You can watch this one on Sportsnet West. Don't look now, Elliot, but despite the fact that the Senators lost, they lose to the Pittsburgh Penguins last night. Matt Murray with another really good game.
Yeah.
Matt Murray last night allowed one goal on 43 shots. Again, it's a losing cause, and there's a lot of that in Ottawa. But Matt Murray looks good lately, Elliot. Does this mean anything right now?
Well, you hope it means that he's recovering and he's on his way back to being the Matt Murray that, you know, was the guy who won two Stanley Cups. You hope that's the case for his own, you know, sake and happiness and health, and also for the Senators as well. You know, it's interesting. It's like a line. It's like a line that one of my old girlfriends used on me, and she said, "Sometimes your relationship has to hit rock bottom before you can repair it." Now, I don't want to explain how we kind of got to that situation.
What's that context?
No. I'm not doing that. But that was her line once when we had a big issue, and she said, sometimes the relationship has to hit rock bottom before you can repair it. Because I think a couple of months ago, there was no way we saw this, right?
Oh, when he got waived? No.
When he got waived and sent to the minors? Like, we thought this was over. Yes. Over. Right? And sometimes, you know, I mean, who knows where this goes? And I hope this is a permanent thing and not just a short-term thing. But maybe that's what it took. Maybe it took, like, the relationship between the Senators and Matt Murray to hit rock bottom. And then they were fine. And then they were – and in that situation, you have to be honest with yourself and with each other about why you are where you are and get to where you have to go.
One final thought here on Ottawa. Are you surprised? I mean, I am, but I'm biased because I really like the player. Are you surprised that here we are in February the 11th and we're still talking about what they're going to do with Nick Paul?
No, I'm not surprised because I – you know, to me, Nick Paul is a very wanted player. I think the Senators want him, and I think legitimate contenders want him. You know, it's that's the thing. Like I look at this, and I just think about it from Ottawa's point of view. All you got to do is look at someone's history, right? The surest predictor of future behavior is past behavior. What does Ottawa tend to do at the deadline with their UFAs? They'll negotiate. They'll go right to the end. And with the big ones, they trade them. Okay, they traded Duchesne, they traded Stone, and they almost traded Carlson to Vegas at the deadline too. And that one fell apart right at the end. So you look at their history. Now, I just think if you take a look at Nick Paul, that is not as complicated a contract to do as Duchesne's would have been or Stone's would have been. Right? It's simply not. Like I think there's teams who want to get him, but I know that they're looking at this and saying, this should not be a hard contract for Ottawa to do. They should be able to get it done. Like this is like I think a lot of people look, it's like a 3x3 or 4x3 deal. Maybe you get him to take a little bit less if he's happy there, but it's kind of where you are. And I just think teams think that, you know, it's not a cap buster. And it's a good bet on a good player who's clearly found a home in your city and your system. So, like, I can see how teams really want Nick Paul. I would, too. I just think that some of them feel that it's a deal they should be able to get done.
Before we wrap up, tomorrow on Hockey Night in Canada, late game, we have the Calgary Flames facing off against the New York Islanders.
Calgary is just tuning really people good. Right now. Eh?
We've seen this before out of the Calgary Flames, the way they can tune teams like a violin. The other one, the 7 o'clock Eastern game, along with the Jets and the Preds, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Vancouver Canucks. Now, as you know, we're on in both markets live right now. Hello to our friends in both Toronto and Vancouver. Do you want to light anything on fire before we bid you good afternoon on either of these teams?
I know how much the Vancouver fans love the 7 o'clock Eastern games when Toronto comes out there. And, you know, we're always glad we could just make you guys happy.
I will say one thing, though. I love being in Vancouver for, you know, for enjoying 4 o'clock starts.
Well, really, you know, before John Shannon ruined the world and created the doubleheaders, you know, Vancouver, when we were kids or teenagers, you know, the Canucks used to play at that time. The Hockey Night game started at 8 o'clock Eastern, no matter where you were. So right. I remember my friends from Vancouver, they go to the Canucks game at 5 and they go out after. They loved it.
That's great.
It's a bit different now. This is always one of our highest rated games of the year. Vancouver, Toronto. I'm looking forward to it. You know, like we have talked about this. Like Bruce Boudreau, he loves coaching against the Leafs. He always wanted to be the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Jim Rutherford, he wanted to be the GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think, for a time. And I think those two guys really love the fact they're in Vancouver. I think they really love the fact they're in Canadian markets. I think they really want to make an impact in Vancouver. They already have, I think. And, you know, the owner there, Kevin Bieksa, will tell you he loved beating Toronto more than he loved beating anyone else. So I just think that those games are always – like those Vancouver-Toronto games, they're always good. And the other thing, too, is weird things happen in their games. Like we have seen incidents involving people that don't normally have incidents. Like yeah. Ryan Miller, for example, when he was there. And I love the intensity when those two teams play each other on a Saturday night. It's fantastic.
It's not within the purview of the CBA for owners to put money on the board, correct? That contravenes the CBA.
Technically, you're not supposed to do that. But, you know, I don't know how much people really follow rules.
Oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Okay, on that, that's good. The fire starter, Elliot Friedman. Great stuff. We'll be with you tomorrow on Hockey Night.
See you later, bud.